Episode number 36 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Head on over to their website. It's firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthcards. Definitely the best boil and bite mouthcard I've ever had. And head on over to their website. It's sisuguard.com. Use the promo code FNP for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It is Thursday, August 23rd, episode number 36 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. We've got two really great guests scheduled for you, two great interviews, and a UFC Lincoln preview. So let's get right into it. All right, episode number 36 of the podcast. So today I'm joined by two really great guests. We've got UFC heavyweight, and he just moved over to Bellator, taking on Czech Congo coming up in October in Tim Johnson. So we're going to talk to him about, you know, what it was like moving over from the UFC to Bellator, coming off a win over Marcelo Golm. We're also joined by a podcast regular in Ty O'Keefe from Fansided MMA, as well as Fight Network and his new show, All Five Rounds, which is on Dialogue. And you can catch him there with Darren Lukes. So Ty and I, we're going to preview the card. It's going to be a really great one. There's not going to be a Fight Night Picks for the fans this Friday or Saturday. I'm actually going to be at FA7 Legends in St. John, New Brunswick, covering that event live on Saturday. So there won't be a Fight Night Picks for the fans episode on Dialogue. But, you know, you can catch me at the event. You can tweet at me, at Craig Allen FNP. And I'm really excited for this weekend. I've got a lot of new merch. It's already loaded up on the site. We've got the new Wordmark hoodies and t-shirts. I think it's a pretty cool logo. You've got the New Brunswick Canada on there, as well as our inception in 2018. So really excited about that stuff. And I'm going to have the merch available at the event. So come over and say hi and pick up a shirt if you'd like. So without further ado, let's just get right into the interview with Tim Johnson, Bellator heavyweight, and he's taking on Czech Congo coming up in October. Thanks so much for joining me. My original plan was to ask you at the end of the interview, do you have a fight coming up in Bellator? But some fight news came out this week. So can you tell us more about it?
Obviously probably, and it actually came out pretty quick. I think it was last Saturday, my manager or my agent got to me and, they offered a check and, I instantly said, yes. I'm like, yep, nope. I will definitely take that fight. I've been waiting a long time to fight a name and finally got one.
Yeah. I mean, Czech Congo's no easy test for your first fight in Bellator. Like, he's on a 6-fight win streak. It's a tough one.
Yep. Nope. And that's, and like scenarios like that, I feel I do a little better, than scenarios where I'm supposed to do good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, big fights in October, at Bellator 208. When does training camp start for you?
It started about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So I mean, you go into the gym. What's kind of the plan for a guy like Czech Congo?
Well, right now we're not really doing too much game plan and scheming yet. Yep. Still milking a little bit of a shoulder, so we're not jumping in too hard yet. But you know, for him, it's kind of that classic grappler versus striker, which is, you know, you can analyze, you can think about what's going to happen, but the truth is, no one ever really knows what's going to happen between a grappler and a striker.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, should be a good fight. Hopefully, you're able to heal up that shoulder. If we go back up a little bit, I mean, your last fight was in Brazil in February against Marcelo Golm, and it was your last fight on your UFC contract. I mean, was the UFC not the right fit for you going forward?
You know, I was fine with staying there, but I heard that, you know, my agent was kind of the middleman, heard that there wasn't very much interest for them, and I told him, like, well, if I'm going to end up somewhere else, I want to end up in Bellator. And, you know, he talked to the powers that be there and found a good deal for me, and I gladly signed on that.
Yeah, and I mean, you signed in April. Was there no rush to get into the cage with Bellator, or were there other factors, you know, getting back with them?
Well, let's see. You know, I signed in April, and probably the middle of May. So, I mean, there was like 6 weeks there. Middle of May, I found out they offered me a fight. I can't remember. Think of his name, that Russian that fought in Oklahoma. They offered him up to me, and I said yes. And about 5-6 weeks before the fight, I had an injury, and I learned my lesson from fighting with injuries from the Albini one. So I'm like, I'm not gonna fight this injured again. So I'm gonna have to back out, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, so you've got the fight coming up in October. It's on the same card as Fedor and Chael Sonnen. If you're able to get the win over Czech Congo, I mean, like you said, he's a pretty big name in the Bellator heavyweight division. Are there any names that come to mind, people you'd like to fight next?
Yeah, there's a handful. I kind of want to walk up the ladder of the heavyweights that were in the tournament, and by the final fight of my contract, be meeting whoever the champ is.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty good plan. Awesome, Tim. Thanks so much for coming on. Good luck with the training camp. Hopefully the shoulder injury is able to heal right up nicely, and you have a good fight against Czech Congo. So where can the fans find you online? If you got any sponsors to shout out, let me know.
Fans can find me at T-Bear Tim. That's going to be my Instagram and my Twitter. And then Facebook is just athlete profile, Timothy Johnson. Should be able to find me. There's only a couple Timothy Johnsons in the world, so I'm pretty easy to find. Sponsors, you know, my gym, the Academy of Combat Arts in Fargo, Metroflex Gym, and Power by Design Fitness is my strength and conditioning coach, Eric Sweeney, and H&I Nutrition.
Awesome. It was great having Tim on the show, and hopefully, you know, that shoulder recovery goes well, and we can see a really great fight against Czech Congo. He's actually riding quite a win streak in Bellator, and he's had, you know, a pretty successful foray over there, getting a finish over Javi Ayala in his last fight. So should be a great fight, and really appreciate Tim coming on. So at this time, I'd like to thank my sponsors. We're brought to you today by FirstRow.ca. Head on over to that website. It's FirstRow.ca. First Row Collectibles, and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order. And we've had a big boost there in American listeners, so you guys keep in mind that you're going to be saving roughly 25% on your order if you make an order with First Row, as all the prices on the website are in Canadian dollars. And Curtis at First Row, he's got wrestling autographs, MMA autographs, old baseball cards, hockey cards. I mean, when I was a kid, and geez, I mean, even up until somewhat recently, you know, I still have a huge collection of hockey cards and baseball cards from when I was a kid. I mean, I'm looking at some of them right now. So I know a lot of you guys out there are collectors as well. So head on over to First Row. Use promo code FNP at checkout. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouth Guards. I mean, I've had a Sisu Mouth Guard for a number of years. One game of hockey, I didn't wear my mouth guard. I get hit right in the tooth and it came out. And it cost me a lot of money out of pocket and it was a pain. And I shouldn't have been wearing my mouth guard. And with Sisu, I mean, they're thin mouth guards, they're boil and bite, but they're a lot thinner than, you know, your average mouth guard. If somebody were to wear one in the UFC, they used to have a former big-name UFC fighter that was one of their affiliates, but if you were to wear one in the UFC, you'd be able to talk to your corner people, you'd be able to take interviews after the fight without popping your mouth guard out, you'd eat, drink with it in. For me, in hockey, it was definitely special because I could yell across the ice for a pass, you could understand me on the bench. And Sisu's recently partnered up with Alex Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation. A bit of the proceeds from every sale, 10%, will go towards Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation on all yellow mouth guards in the Aero and Junior styles. So you can still head over to Sisu, use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off, and they'll be donating 10% of the proceeds to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. We're going to roll right into the UFC Lincoln preview. Joined again by Ty O'Keefe, fan-sided MMA, also with the Fight Network, and he's host of All Five Rounds on Dialogue. And I'm actually the co-host on one of his shows called The Toctagon on Dialogue, so make sure you check those out. But Ty and I, we always have a good time, and it's always fun breaking down cards with him. So I'm going to go old school on this one, and I'm going to get deep into the card, talk about some of the fights that, you know, might not be on your radar, but are certainly on mine. I know the very first one coming up on that card, you know, one that I'm really excited about. So let's get right into the interview. All right, so now I'm joined by a former guest of the podcast, and he's back again, Ty O'Keefe, host of All Five Rounds on Dialogue. You can catch his content on Fansided MMA as well as Fight Network. Ty, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for having me back once again.
Awesome, man. So what we're going to do today, we're going to do a UFC Lincoln preview card, and we're going to go, you know, kind of up and down It's a pretty interesting card. There's a lot of decent fights kind of slotted in here and there. And I think it's kind of flying in a little under the radar. There hasn't been too much promotion. It's kind of been overshadowed by UFC 228, 229, and 230. As well, there's been some fight announcements for later on this year that a lot of people have been focusing on. What have you guys been doing over at All Five Rounds lately?
Well, we like to kind of just stick to one or two topics. My co-host Darren Laux and I, we're kind of trying to stick this 25-minute format, you know, being all five rounds, 25 minutes. Lately, we've spoken about our last episode. We've done three episodes now. We spoke about the Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold rematch. You can find that on my Twitter, my Facebook. We've talked a lot about Conor Khabib. We're going to do an episode about this whole Cyborg Nunez fight being made.
Yeah.
And generally, we also did a great episode where Darren gave some really great insight on weight cutting. He's had some experience with it, and he's a trained amateur MMA fighter himself, a phenomenal athlete. And so we kind of just cover all bases, but we like to keep it short and keep it moving for, you know, people who like to do other things and spend hours on podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a great platform so far. You can catch me with Fight Night Picks for the Fans. Not going to be hosting one this week, and I'm actually more than likely going to be missing out on UFC Fight Night Lincoln, but still going to give the previews anyway. I'm going to be live at Fighting Alliance 7 Legends in St. John, New Brunswick, so pretty excited for that. I actually just had a new order of shirts come in, so I've got quite a bit of merchandise, and you can pick that up at the event. So, we might as well just get right into the Lincoln breakdowns and preview. Like I said, I think it's a really good card. What are some of the fights that you're, you know, most interested in?
Well, I mean, to start at the earliest fights, on the early prelims, honestly, I love watching Joanne Calderwood fight.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of her since, I guess I have to admit, I did kind of hop on the tough bandwagon. When she first started, I didn't know much about her before then. But there's just something about her tenacity and her potential. I know she suffered a tough loss to Calvillo, and then she kind of went up the ladder and was submitted early by Jessica Andrade prior to that. But, you know, the Joanne Calderwood we saw against Letourneau and Courtney Casey and things like that, I think there's so much more of that in the future.
Yeah.
So anytime Joanne Calderwood steps in the octagon, I'm tuning in. I really think she's one of those fighters that the division needs to have too. You know, she's one of those staples. She may not ever win a UFC title, obviously, you know, things like that, but she is so critical to the development of the division for both other fighters coming through and testing themselves against someone experienced like her. But also her kind of giving these top contenders a run for their money when they're not necessarily expecting it.
Yeah.
She definitely needs this win. I mean, who's kidding? You lose two in a row, three in a row can sometimes be suicide in the UFC. So I really hope she pulls off a victory over Free on Saturday.
I mean, the good thing for her is she's moving up from strawweight to flyweight. So she's not going to have to worry about the weight cut as much. And I agree with you. I mean, she's a really exciting fighter to watch. I mean, right now, the odds as of last night, I think she was a minus 175 favorite when I had a chance to look. And I think that move up, it's really going to help her out. I mean, Faria, if you look at her record, 18-7-1, you know, she's finished 12 fights, 7 knockouts, 5 submissions. But I mean, by stats alone, if you really want to look into it that way, Calderwood blows Faria out of the water. I mean, she's had 6 UFC fights. They've all been tough ones. Like you said, if we see anything like the Casey or Letourneau fights, I think it should be a good one. And I've got Joanne Calderwood to win this one.
Yeah, me as well. I'm glad to hear you agree on that.
It doesn't happen often, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
beyond that, yeah. Kind of moving up, and I know it's prelims, only got 3 fights on it, but the early prelims.
Yeah.
But on the fights that the Fight Network will be carrying, you got to kind of, I don't know, Mickey Gall is a draw just because of his history thus far.
Yeah.
He's kind of, you know, with CM Punk and Sage Northcutt and things.
Mike Jackson.
What's the UFC really doing with him? You know?
With Mickey Gall?
I don't understand what the point is at this point.
I mean,
he's
Mickey,
not going to start fighting top guys.
Well, he's not a blue chip prospect. I mean, when I think of these blue chip prospects, I actually think more so of Bellator. The UFC doesn't really have anybody that really catches my eye that's, you know, you have to watch them. I mean, I'm thinking Aaron Pico, Ed Ruth. Those are guys that are, you know, top of my radar. So Mickey Gall kind of falls in a weird spot. I mean, where he had that loss to Randy Brown, it kind of, you got to question him. I mean, Randy Brown's not a bad fighter, but you saw the way he lost against Nico Price in his last fight, and you scratch your head. And I mean, in this fight, you've got two New Jersey guys in Gall, and then you get George Sullivan. And George Sullivan's another one of those guys. Like, where's his place in the UFC? Because he took a two-year break, then he fought Nico Price, and he lost. And if you're looking at Gall, I mean, he's still a young guy. And he actually
he beat
just
Sage Northcutt his last time out, and I still say Sage Northcutt is a big win for anybody.
Well, I mean, he moved his camp. I know he was heavy on the BJJ when he was still in New Jersey. Moved his camp to California. He's hanging out, spending a lot of time with world-class kickboxer and Joe Schilling. So maybe his stand-up's going to be a little bit better. But yeah, George Sullivan, it's a tough call. I mean, it's a weird fight. Sullivan's got 11 of 17 wins by knockout, but he's been submitted four times. So I think if Gall can get the fight to the ground, I think he's going to be able to win.
Yeah, and he's proven dangerous on the ground, too. Like I said, against Northcutt, I was surprised.
Yeah.
I was disappointed in Super Sage in that fight, to tell you the truth. But there's bigger, better things ahead for that kid. Mickey Gall, it's like he's almost like a celebrity fighter at this point.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, he fought CM Punk, and then, that's kind of how he got into the UFC, right? He told Dana White, look, man, I'll fight CM Punk.
Yeah, after he won his pro debut.
Who wouldn't have fought CM Punk at that point in time, right?
Yeah.
So, and then he fights Sage Northcutt, who was kind of, you know, as a celebrity just because of his background and stuff like that. So losing to Randy Brown leaves him kind of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is I hate to say it, it's because it's so redundant and you hear it so many times, but it's make or break time for Mickey Gall. I really think it is.
Yeah.
He doesn't have enough on his own otherwise to justify his position right now.
I mean, he's a heavy favorite in the fight. In my mind's eye, George Sullivan's a big guy at welterweight, but Mickey Gall's got a little bit of height on him, and he's sitting at a -330 favorite. So I do have Gall in that fight. And for Sullivan, yeah, I mean, two-year break, and then he fought Nico Price, who's a way tougher opponent than Gall. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, moving along, I guess, you know, next fight, you got middleweights in 10-4 Andrew Sanchez and 10-1 Marcus Perez. And that was a breakdown that I really had to go in depth because I wasn't overly familiar with Marcus Perez. And at the same time, I knew quite a bit about Sanchez. And I watched a number of Andrew Sanchez fights. And I mean, he's been finished in his last two by Anthony Smith and Ryan Jaynes. And if you know anything about Ryan Jaynes, he just turned, I looked him up on SureDog, he just turned 37 yesterday. So happy birthday, Ryan Jaynes. From Newfoundland, and he only has two knockouts in his record. And if you go down and watch his last fight against Sanchez, he had Sarah McMahon in his corner from BC. He lives in BC now. And Sanchez dropped him twice, big time, in the first round. It was a 10-8 first round by far for Sanchez, and then he gassed. In the second round, he got outstruck, and in the third round, he got finished due to exhaustion and a combination of all the strikes that he took. So I was really disappointed in Sanchez. He won season 23 of The Ultimate Fighter in the light heavyweight division, fighting at middleweight now. Marcus Perez, he's 1-1 in the UFC, got a loss to Eric Anders, your boy, and he's got a win over James Bochnevich. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I think Perez is going to take this one. He's got a submission win over former LFA middleweight champion Ian Heinisch, who actually got a win on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series this summer and got a UFC contract. But that should be a slobber knocker of a fight.
Yeah, and coming up, you know, back-to-back knockout losses is tough for anybody, and you kind of got to wonder if Sanchez is going to be gun-shy.
Yeah.
I'd say anybody gets their bell rung twice in a row like that, it has to come in a lot more hesitant than they would normally. That's just, I mean, common sense, right? Taking hard shots like that, and plus it rattles your confidence.
Yeah, for sure.
As I always say, losing three in a row is never a good thing to UFC, so obviously he needs to win this fight. But Perez, you know, I don't know. First of all, Eric Anders is my boy. But, you know, I don't think that loss to Eric Anders didn't really tell us much about Perez.
No.
And then his submission win was so quick in the first round in his last fight that it didn't really tell us anything either. So it's kind of like Sanchez coming off back-to-back knockout losses against a huge question mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So this fight really is kind of one of the hardest to predict on this card, I think. But I don't know if it's going to be like one of those, all drag them out, knock out, teeth on the ground, five-round slugfests, or, you know, one punch or one submission and it's over in 30 seconds. No idea.
Yeah,
so
I'm
going to stay spineless and just not call it.
Yeah, it's a tough one to call. I mean, for Sanchez, like, I don't know the strike count right off the top of my head, but he had Ryan Jaynes pretty much finished. I was surprised the referee didn't call the fight in the first round. And then you look at him in the second round, he's totally gassed. I mean, a guy that won the Ultimate Fighter at light heavyweight, and then he moves down to welterweight, and he's having cardio issues. Why not go back up to light heavyweight? But, yeah, I mean, it's a tough one to call. And if we move along ahead in the card, I'm going to reference back to Alcantara and Sandhagen, as well as the very first fight on the card, the one that I'm most excited about. So if we look into a really interesting fight that, you know, I see it the way of the odds, but I want to get your take. You've got 23-8 James, and his nickname is the James Krause, and he's taken on one of the biggest sleepers in the welterweight division, other than Vicente Luque for me. It's 13-2 Warley Alves. I mean, how do you see that fight playing out?
You know, I can see why you're attracted to it, right? Because there's so much that we don't know. James Krause has been, we've seen more of him as a coach lately almost.
Yeah.
You know, like, which I was kind of impressed by. I was impressed that Stipe Miocic, wasn't it him who and basically brought him on as a coach?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge compliment in itself, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean he's got the tools to apply that to the octagon. And you know, a lot of guys are great football players, great coaches, aren't great athletes, you know, or they don't perform that great in on the field or in the octagon themselves. Now, James Krause, God, he's got so much potential, you know. You look at him, you think he's intelligent, he's fairly accurate, he's definitely not one-dimensional.
Yeah.
You know, and he does have more experience than you would think. And you know, a rundown of his resume, you see a lot of red. You know, he's won four straight. And, you know, that's no joke. Well, who has he won those fights against?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, he's on that win streak, too. Sorry to cut you off. On that win streak, three of four by decision. I mean, he's had 9 UFC fights. And if you look at his whole record, 20 of 25 wins are by finish. But, I mean, he's fighting one of the tough... Like, I'm serious. Like, I'm not joking around about Warley Alves. I mean, he had two straight losses. He had two straight losses, and he admitted that he got complacent in the division. He thought, I'm on top of the world. Forget about training. Forget about trying. I'm just going to go out there and fight because I'm so good. I mean, 1-4 in a row, then he lost to Brian Barberena and Kamaru Usman, and those are two tougher guys. And if you look at his four UFC wins, he's beaten Marcio Alexandre Jr., Alan Joban, Nordine Taleb, and Colby Covington. And I mean, he since then, I guess, sorry, since you know, losing two straight, he's won two straight. And he had a corner stoppage TKO win earlier on this year. I mean, he's one of those guys that can finish a fight all sorts of different ways. He's to the point where he's training hard again. He's competing hard again. I mean, if you watch that fight against Aliyev, I mean, that was a tough, grinded-out fight. And I think he's going to win this one. I mean, he's trending around a minus 400 favorite. So, I mean, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but I'm pretty high on Warley Alves.
Well, I mean, and that's a huge, huge number, minus 400. I mean, that's for a reason. Yeah. I'm surprised to see it that high. I'm sure that's going to put a chip on James Krause's shoulder.
Yeah.
But that chip isn't necessarily going to be enough to do anything to Warley Alves. So, you know, I think a win by Krause would be a pretty big upset at this point. But he doesn't necessarily need it. If James Krause loses on Saturday, he's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? He's fine. I don't know the status of his current UFC contract, but you win 4 in a row and you drop one, you got to really be on the wrong side of Dana White and UFC to get cut or get, you know, bounced. The thing is, he needs to be a little more active, obviously, on a consistent basis, and whether he's going to be a continuous coaching or not. Obviously, it looks like he's going to continue to be a coach, and that's great. Yeah. But man, I don't know. I think that this fight matters a lot more to Alvarez just because of if we get him in a good camp and get him disciplined and focused, we've seen what he can do.
Yep.
So definitely, I definitely think Alvarez is going to take this fight.
Yeah, I think you will too. And I mean, that's your featured prelim. That's your featured prelim. You know, first fight on the main card, a guy whose name we talked about, and it's a terrible nickname, your boy, Eric Anders, and he's taken on 15-4 Tim Williams. Tim Williams, I can't remember. I saw an article come out today about him. I believe it was MMA Junkie. And I question why he's in the UFC. I mean, he's a 13-fight vet of CFFC, you know, regional promotion. And, you know, every time he's lost, it's been by finish. He's been finished by Anthony Smith twice in that promotion, been finished by Dustin Jacoby, a guy who's fought Bellator and UFC talent as well. His first UFC fight was a knockout loss to Oscar Piotta. And, I mean, Eric Anders, you can argue with me if you want. He lost his last fight. I don't think he did. I think it was a case of the fight was in Brazil and it was against Lyoto Machida, and Machida ended up winning by split decision. But watching that fight, Eric Anders won that fight. So Anders is trending between a minus 800 and a minus 1,000 favorite. And yeah, I'm taking the favorite in that fight.
Yeah, and that's, I think a lot of that's based on the lack of experience of his opponent. You know, Tim Williams only fought once and lost. And so it's hard to really, you know, base anything. You can't really say, okay, a guy who went toe-to-toe with Machida and he's won twice in the UFC is going to be a dog heading in this fight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not going to happen. So, no, I'm definitely with you. I don't even think there's much to debate in a fight like this. I would be surprised if it didn't turn out in Anders' favor. And if it doesn't turn out in Anders' favor, he's got some severe look in the mirror to be on that Sunday morning.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like I said, that Machida fight, go back and watch it. It was the headliner of a card. And Eric Anders, in my mind, won that fight for sure. But we'll keep it moving along. I think the next fight's more than likely a fight of the night contender between six-ranked flyweight John Moraga, sitting at 19-6, and he's taking on Deiveson Figueiredo, sitting at 14. And I mean, Figueiredo, he's 14-0, 3-0 in the UFC, 12 of those wins by finish. And if you look at Moraga, I mean, geez, he's fought everybody in that division.
Oh, yeah.
He's had 13 fights in the UFC, all against top talent. Title shot in 2013. Lost that one, of course, against Demetrius Johnson. But, man, I mean, Figueiredo is a slight favorite in that fight. And it's really a pick'em. I mean, who do you have in that one?
I'm taking Moraga just based on experience because he's been in there so many guys, including, obviously, Demetrius Johnson. He's won three straight coming into this fight. And, you know, Figueiredo is 14th, but as far as I'm concerned, this division is, I don't know, it's pretty weak beyond the top three or four guys in terms of comparison to other divisions. You know, it's a very top-heavy division. So being ranked 14th in the UFC's flyweight division, to me, doesn't mean much.
Hey, I mean, Olga Sasaki's ranked 15th, and he's a pretty good fighter.
Yeah, but, well, it is what it is. You know, Figueiredo's beat Jared Brooks. That's, you know, worth noting.
Yeah.
But I like Moraga just backed on experience in this. I think he's going to grind out a decision, and I think it'll be entertaining, but I like Moraga to kind of hang on to a decision, and who knows what's next for him after this, especially with the new champion at the top of the division. Hey, you never know. You've got Cejudo there, not Johnson. Maybe Moraga will just be the beginning of a charge back up towards another title shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting, and you've got Sergio Pettis fighting again too, and he's one of those top guys in that title picture. And it's really kind of cloudy up there whether or not Cejudo ends up fighting Dillashaw. I mean, we've seen the rumors there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the flyweight division. But yeah, this fight, like I said, I've got it as a potential fight of the night contender. Next fight coming up, I don't think it should even happen. It doesn't make any sense. Brian Barberena taking on Jake Ellenberger. I want to assume that this is going to be Ellenberger's swan song at home in Nebraska because he's 2-8 in his last 10. He's been finished in six of those eight losses. And he's been finished in three straight, so I'm
with you on this fight. I don't see what the point is other than to give Ellenberger a shot at a win before he closes out his career. That's the only reason I see this even happening. I see no point in it otherwise, because a win over Barberena is not going to do anything. If Barberena beats Ellenberger, it's not really going to do much for him either, considering what Ellenberger's done, you know, in the last six, seven, eight fights. So really, to me, it's kind of set up for that. If Ellenberger doesn't take an opportunity, you know, take this opportunity to have this, I think he won't get another one.
Yeah.
Also being, like you said, you know, it's kind of in his, is he from Nebraska? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, he's from Omaha. Yep.
Well, that's close enough. Nebraska ain't that big. And so, yeah, definitely. It's too bad because Ellenberger, his past six, seven fights aren't indicative of who he was once.
No, for sure.
You know, he deserves to be remembered as a respected welterweight veteran. You know what I mean? Straight up, regardless of what happened Saturday. I hope for that sake, he pulls out the win.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Barberena. I mean, he's 13-5. He actually beat Jake Ellenberger's brother Joe at one point by TKO in his UFC debut, which is kind of interesting, 2014. But I mean, his only losses are to Chad Laprise, Colby Covington, and Leon Edwards, and they've only been, you know, losses by decision. So got Barberena in that fight, but yeah, it's going to be a tough one to see. And one of the names that we talked about earlier on, and another fight on this main card, it's quite a heavy main card. I believe there's, what, six fights on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got top women's strawweight fight between Courtney Casey and Angie Hill. I'm really interested to see how this one goes. I mean, Casey ended up winning her last fight. She fought against Michelle Waterson. I mean, she's 3-5 in the UFC. All of her losses have been by decision. Hill's 4-4 in two stints in the UFC. I mean, how do you see this one going?
Angel Hill's such a wild card when she fights a lot.
Yeah.
To me, Courtney Casey's one of those people, kind of like JoJo Calderwood, who's kind of essential to her division.
Yeah.
But you'll notice that Courtney Casey, she'll get a victory, and she'll beat someone like Randa Markos, and then she goes up to Gedalia, gets beaten, you know, and then wins again and goes up to try to face Felice Herrig, who I consider to be kind of on the same level as Courtney Casey. Actually, Felice Herrig's been a lot better lately.
Yeah.
You know, she couldn't take care of Herrig, and then she
yeah,
I don't
miss...
think Courtney Casey should have even gotten the water.
No, I mean, I misspoke there. I mean, I had Casey winning that fight, rather. She lost the fight against Michelle Waterson, but I had her winning that, you know, watching that fight, yeah.
I don't even think she should have gotten the Waterson fight after losing to 2 out of 3 prior to that. But at the same time, Angela Hill, it's like, okay, she's a great athlete. You've seen what she can do in Invicta. You know, she's done much better in Invicta than she has in the UFC.
Yeah, exactly.
And she continues to get these fights on the main card, and I kind of question why to some extent, just because, you know, she's never really, I don't know, I've never really been impressed by what she's been able to do in the octagon. And really, when you lose 3 straight like that, and then you bounce back with 1 win over, you know, and, you know, okay, she's won 2 out of 3, great, but she hasn't beaten anybody. And the way I look at that Nina Ansaroff fight, that was an opportunity to be a turning point for her. And like the Nina Ansaroff fight could have been big. If she would have won that fight, she would have gotten a bigger opponent than Moroz in her last fight, and she could have been going somewhere. But I don't. This fight, to me, despite the rankings of both, you know, top 15 fighters, I think it's just, I don't even think it deserves to be a main card fight.
I mean, both
you know,
of them.
That's where I'm at. I'll tell you right now. Cut it out. I'm taking Courtney Casey.
Okay, yeah, I mean, both of them have had 8 fights in UFC, so you can actually look at those fight metric stats and go into it. And I mean, based on striking grappling stats, Hill edges Casey in every single category, so it seems. I mean, she averages a strike given more than Casey and 1 less absorbed per minute. And I mean, Casey, if you watch any of her fights, you watch that Michelle Waterson fight, the Felice Herrig fight, she's not a good boxer. Distance management isn't all that great. And she's really stiff and quite predictable. So I think Hill's going to be able to...
Which is the opposite of Angela Hill.
Yeah, I mean,
Hill's very flexible. She'll come out of nowhere. She'll improvise. She's
exactly.
She's when you're least expecting it, yeah.
Exactly.
It'll be an exciting fight. Could be a short night for Casey, but I'm taking Casey for some reason. I just got a feeling.
No, I mean, that makes total sense. So, I mean, we keep rolling along. Your co-main event between one of my favorite fighters to watch out there, who's moving down to featherweight, 18-12, Michael Johnson. He's taken on 18-5, Andre Touchy-Feely. And I mean, the reason why I'm such a big fan of watching Michael Johnson fight, I mean, you go back and you look at his wins. I mean, he's beaten Dustin Poirier, Edson Barboza, prime Gleison Tibau, Tony Ferguson. Those are just some of his wins. I mean, but he's got 3 losses in a row, lost to Khabib, lost to Justin Gaethje in a tough fight that he shouldn't have, you know, he shouldn't have fought that way against him. And then a loss to Darren Elkins. So, I mean, now he's taking on Andre Feely, who's got what? A win over the GOAT, Artem Lobov, and I mean Dennis Ximenes Bermudez, and that was by split, was it not?
Yeah, and this is a big fight for Feely and not that big for Johnson.
Yeah, exactly.
This is like a hang-on fight for Johnson and a, like, make-my-career fight for Feely.
Well,
by the way, has the creepiest nickname I've heard in a very long time.
One of the good things for Michael Johnson, you know, we were talking about James Krause, where he's kind of moved into a bit of a coaching role. If you watch Bellator 204 last week, Michael Johnson was out there with Hard Knocks 365, and they had a lot of fighters on that card. And Michael Johnson was in the corner just about every one of them, if not everyone. So it was good to see for Michael Johnson. Kind of odd, you know, with a fight coming up a week later that he wasn't, you know, sticking around home and, you know, training.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that, though. A lot of these guys just break the monotony.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense.
They're in the gym anyways, and there are other guys in the gym are training for upcoming fights, different promotions, the same promotion. That seems to not be an issue at all. I mean, it's just getting a guy out. But, you know, I think it actually helps, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and I was the same. I kind of spoke highly about Michael Case in the same regard, because you see him out all the time cornering fighters and learning. And I mean, it didn't pay off for him in his last few fights, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely good to see guys trying to improve and learn from coaching. But I mean, as far as this fight's concerned, you know, you got to remember Andre Feely's had 10 UFC fights, which is kind of crazy. I wouldn't have thought that. But I mean, yeah, it's a tough one. It's almost a pick 'em. I mean, Michael Johnson's a slight favorite, and I've got Johnson in this fight. I mean, Feely's not overly dynamic, which Johnson is, and I think that's what's going to help him out.
Yeah, I'm with Johnson 100% on this fight. I don't think it'd be big for Feely to win, but I don't think that he's going to.
Yeah.
I think it'll be kind of one of those. I'm honestly not predicting a very exciting fight, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
I got a feeling it's going to be a decision with a lot of moving around. I don't know. This fight doesn't intrigue me that much, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that it's a co-main, but I mean, as far as the main event's concerned, we've talked about it off air quite a bit this week. I put out an article about you know, Justin Gaethje and the fact that he's ranked in the UFC 1-2, lost his last two fights by knockout. He's ranked 7th, and he's getting a main event against James Vick, who otherwise probably wouldn't get a main event booking. So it's kind of a strange one there. But I mean, Vic's on a 4-fight win streak. So last night I went back, I watched quite a bit of tape on James Vick. I watched his fight against Brunil Dariush, and the problem that he had is almost the same problem that Courtney Casey had in her fights. You know, just stiff. And as soon as somebody rushes in to strike James Vick, he kind of backs up. He gets hit with a lot of strikes. The one thing that he has to do for sure is throw that body kick where he extends his leg all the way out and keeps distance, manages distance. But I mean, Gaethje, the one thing he's good at, or really good at, is getting in close, boxing. That, you know, obviously that's a strong suit. He's had 3 fights in UFC, 3 performances of the night, 1 fight of the night, 1 fight of the year. So it'll be interesting to see. But the biggest stat that you know, I keep in mind is that Gaethje, his significant strikes landed and absorbed per minute, it's 8.67 landed and 10.68 received, which is terrible. So we'll see what happens. I mean, what do you think about this main event?
You know, I've always said that Justin Gaethje, he takes a lot of abuse because he doesn't have the athletic ability to get in close on guys in the stand-up game without taking that abuse.
Which is so strange. I mean, a guy, a Division I wrestler, and...
I know, but I'm talking about in the stand-up game.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm talking about with his hands. He does, as far as I'm concerned, he puts on a hell of a fight. And yep. You get him on the ground, he's a monster.
Yep.
I mean, there's no doubt. He, you know, at Arizona, he was a monster. He's a monster now still. And he is a Rocky-like fighter who will give you a fight every time
Yep. He'll
put on a show. But I think one of his main problems is he takes so many shots to the head, so many punches, is because he does not have the athletic ability to close the distance on these guys without taking that abuse, like maybe a Conor McGregor or somebody a little bit quicker, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just my opinion, and that's the step up between when he was with World Series Fighting, now PFL. That's the step up in competition.
Exactly.
And I said it the other day on All 5 Rounds with Darren, is that I think Ben Askren would have suffered the same fate if he came to the UFC, because Ben Askren, great on the ground, great outside of the UFC, blah, blah, blah. But I'm telling you, it's a different level with those hands when you get up to the top 2 or 3 guys. And a guy like Gaethje and a guy like Askren, I don't think they can cut it. And Gaethje right now, I mean, the UFC had high hopes for this guy. This guy was coming in as a champion.
I mean, he's still 18-2, yeah?
Yeah, he was supposed to be it. You know, he's supposed to be, we had another big, you know, contender to the lightweight division. And granted, he stood toe-to-toe with Alvarez. He hasn't gone down. He got mowed over or anything. But he hasn't done shit either. And so moving forward, we got to think, okay, Justin Gaethje's already said, if I get outclassed, which apparently doesn't necessarily mean he loses, so he can still lose and stick around. But he says Vic is so bad that if he gets outclassed on Saturday, he's going to retire.
Yeah, and he said after his last fight that he had 5 fights left. So that's never a good mindset, never something you want to hear.
And look at Vic's resume. Vic hasn't really beat anybody of note, like, at this level. Definitely not at Gaethje's level or his notoriety.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Gaethje doesn't really deserve his notoriety right now. Gaethje isn't Justin Gaethje that people still think he is.
Yeah.
Because until he proves otherwise, he's not. So I got Vic winning this fight, and I got Vic winning it early. I think he's going to knock him out in the second round. And I just think that Vic is going to be sorely disappointed at what he gets for this win.
Yeah.
Because Gaethje is not what Gaethje's supposed to be.
No, he and James Vic, as long as I can remember, he's been calling for top opponents. I got to have one. Now, finally, he's got one against a guy he really doesn't like in Justin Gaethje. It'll be interesting to see what he do. I think he's going to finish the fight. I think he's going to finish it by submission. And second round's a pretty good prediction. So that's the main card. That's the main event. I'm going to, you know, kind of circle back for just a second. So the fight that I'm most excited to see on Saturday night, and hopefully I get the chance to see it live, you've got one of my favorite fighters to watch in 25-9 with one no contest, Rani Yahya, taking on 13-2 Luke Cool Hand Sanders. It's the classic submission versus striker matchup. We saw Luke Sanders fighting against Alcantara, who's also on this card. He got way too over-aggressive, got rolled into a knee bar, couldn't get out of it. And, I mean, you know, Rani Yahya is a little bit slower than Alcantara is. I mean, both older guys, but Rani Yahya is only 33. He's been fighting as a pro in MMA since he was 18 years old. He was in WEC. He's had a ton of fights in the UFC. His first UFC fight was in 2011 against Mike Brown, and he beat him. And he's got 19 submission wins in 15 total wins. So, I mean, he's one of those guys that a lot of people don't think about, but he's almost like a pocket-sized Damian Maia, and he's a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and I've been hearing you go on about this for days now, so I totally love your passion, and, you know, and I'm not messing with it. Put it that, I'm just going to let it lay and let people absorb and hear that passion. I'm not even going to interfere with this.
No, it should be a good fight, and really looking forward to UFC Fight Night Lincoln. So that just about does us for this episode of Fight Night Picks. I'd like to thank you, Ty, for coming on. Make sure everybody goes out and checks out all five rounds, as well as fan-sided MMA and the Fight Network content. When might you be back on all five rounds? Do you know yet?
Yeah, we're looking to do possibly an episode tonight. We're gonna do some wax poetic on the Nunez-Cyborg fight and possibly some other stuff. Definitely put some episodes out this weekend. And as always, Darren and I are going to be on top of it and looking to push out a lot more content in the future on Dialogue and possibly some other platforms as well. So check that out on Twitter at above the bold tie and hit me up on Facebook. And as always, I appreciate you letting me give my shameless plug, and I appreciate coming on the show. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Really appreciate Ty coming back on the show, and like I said, I'm really excited about that Rani Yahya fight. I mean, taking on Luke Sanders, he's a tough opponent, he's really aggressive, and like I said, fought Yuri Alcantara and got rolled into a knee bar. So Alcantara is fighting on this card as well. He's 35-9 with one no contest, and he's taken on Corey Sandhagen fighting out of Elevation in Colorado. So Sandhagen won his last fight against Austin Arnett. His last three wins have been by TKO. And he's really similar to Luke Sanders, but he's a little bit more fluid. And I think he's going to be able to get the job done against Alcantara. And since Alcantara fought Luke Sanders, he's lost to Brian Kelleher by submission, Alejandro Perez, and he's got a win over Joe Soto. But he's no longer ranked in the division. So I think you're going to see Sandhagen win that fight. And really appreciate Ty coming on to give us the analysis. So that just about does it for this episode of Fight Night Picks. Really like to thank my two guests, Ty O'Keefe, as well as Tim Johnson. Excited to see that fight in Bellator against Czech Congo. It's going to be a really good one. Hopefully you can check it out, and hopefully that shoulder recovery goes well. Make sure you check out my content on the website, fightnightpicks.net. I'm going to be live at Fighting Alliance 7 coming at you from St. John, New Brunswick on Saturday. So you can see me there. Make sure you come out and say hi. I'm going to be selling some of the new merch. There's a new Wordmark tees and hoodies as well. You can pick up, you know, the Fight Night Picks hoodies as well that I'm wearing. And, you know, I'll be really excited to see you there. So make sure you subscribe if you're new to the channel. Content's going to be out at the end of every week, and I'm looking forward to hosting another episode of Fight Night Picks for the fans next week on Dialogue. So we'll see you all again next week.